Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/turniton to get started. Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, and entertainers. If you listened to episode 48 of this show a little while back, you might have heard me talking to my friend Jody Amon, who is a leading psychotherapist in her field. We talked about her book called You Won Anxiety Zero on that show. You can get the audio version of that book on Audible, and Jody even reads it for you. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/turniton. Again, that's audibletrial.com/turniton for your free audiobook.
This is Turn It On.
What's up, my friends? This is Josh Paul, and you're listening to Turn It On. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 58 of Turn It On. My name is Michael J., and this is my podcast. We are coming to you, as always, from beautiful Nashville, Tennessee, the center of the musical universe. My friend Eric Borash, or Ebo, as he is known to many, is on the program today. But before we get to my talk with him, I need to take care of a little business here first. We have a brand new website at tiopod.com with a brand new merch store. We have t-shirts for men and women in all sizes with pull-down menus to mix and match shirt and logo colors, and there's a pretty big selection there. We also have coffee mugs, hats, and hoodies, and you can also buy my most recent records and my latest EP directly from me, so I encourage you to do that. We're trying a company called Dizzy Jam for the merch at the moment, so if you order something and you have any kind of comments about it whatsoever, if you're not satisfied for any reason, or if you're extra satisfied, if the stuff shows up, looks great, feels great, fits great, please drop me a line at mj@tiopod.com. That is letter M, letter J at tiopod.com, or you can reach me on the contact page at tiopod.com and give me some of your comments. We'd also love to see you wearing the merch, so please feel free to send a photo or two our way, or you can post it on your Instagram page and tag either at Michael J Official, that's my page, or at Turn It On Podcast, that's the show's page, so we can see you modeling our swag. Either way, please keep in touch with me and just let me know how we're doing. Hey, everybody. This show is a labor of love for me, and I've always worked very hard to deliver meaningful content of only the highest quality for you. My advertising budget at the moment is $0.00, and in the current climate of podcasting, it's getting harder and harder for independent shows like mine to get noticed, and even harder to attract sponsors to monetize things so I can start possibly making a living doing this thing, or at the very least, supplementing my income so that my time isn't quite as stretched when I'm trying to put the shows together. This is where I ask you to do me a favor. If you're a listener of the show and you've enjoyed it, please subscribe to the feed on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, and also take a quick minute to leave me a review on iTunes. This not only helps with ratings, but it also helps other people find the show. I'm sure there's an absolutely huge audience for this thing that's just waiting to discover it, but I can't get there without your help. I've also set up a Patreon page at patreon.com/turniton. That is patreon.com/turniton. And I've only set up a single pledge tier, which is just $1. You can definitely give me more, and that would be amazingly awesome. But if a few hundred of you pledge at $1 or even $2 a month, it'll start to lighten the load a little bit. And there will be no rewards for those pledges on Patreon at the moment, but if the response is good enough, I'll be able to start generating bonus content for people who pledge, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there. And the last thing you can do to help out is to tell your friends about the show. Word of mouth is always the best advertisement, so start talking about it, posting about it, sharing it to your social media pages, and all that kind of stuff. And hopefully, with a small amount of effort on your part, we can start growing the audience for this thing, and I can keep doing it. Thank you all so much for sticking with me here, and thank you all in advance.
Hey, this is Luke DeJanes. I just finished eating tacos, and now back to Turn It On with Michael J.
All right, folks, I just got back from a 6-day run of shows up in Canada with Aaron Goodvin. I'm a bit jet lagged and a bit caffeinated, and I'm entirely exhausted because we flew overnight to get back to Nashville early this morning. But I promised you all that a show would go up a little later than usual this week, so I'm delivering on my promise right here and right now. It has been a very, very exciting time for me personally, and I just want to talk a little bit about the gratitude attitude I'm feeling at the moment before I play you my talk with Eric. When Ebo got to my house the morning we did this talk, he immediately started talking about the gratitude he was feeling for the good things in his life. So I thought this was an appropriate way to start this episode off. For those of you playing the home game, and for those of you who may not be entirely up to speed with who I am or what my deal is, there is way too much to go into to catch you up properly. But let me just say that I landed my current gig with Canadian country artist Aaron Goodvin just over a year ago. And since that time, Aaron's had 3 top 10 Canadian singles on Warner Brothers Canada. He also won a CCMA award for Song of the Year in 2018 for a song called Lonely Drum, which incidentally is the only platinum selling single by a Canadian country artist in the last 2 years in Canada. Aaron went on to sign a deal with Reviver here in the States, and the first single from his new record V, a song called You Are, went straight up to number 1, and the first US single from that record, a song called Bars and Churches, is quickly climbing up the charts here in the States, and it's looking like it's going to be a big radio hit here as well. To top it all off, Aaron, myself, and the band announced just yesterday that we'll be going on the road for a string of arena dates as direct support for Rascal Flatts in late October, early November of this year up in Canada. So as you can only imagine, this has been a really thrilling ride for all of us. It's a really easy thing to become overly jaded when you work in the music business, and particularly as a sideman for an artist, but I personally fight every day to avoid falling into that trap of negativity. I started playing in clubs when I was 15 years old with my first band, Exploding Boy, and my dream was always to play in arenas to thousands of people. I will be 48 years old on June 26th, coming up here in just a few days, so I think my dues have been paid in full by now. I've earned my place. Even though my childhood dream has morphed a bit over the years, and even though my name isn't the one on the marquee, and it probably won't ever be, I'm still feeling the same sense of excitement and gratitude as if it was. I'm incredibly fortunate to be the guitar player for an artist like Aaron, who's 100% the genuine article. He's got great songs that make it a joy to perform on a nightly basis, and the other guys in the band are all some of the most down-to-earth, talented, hilarious, and sweetest people I've ever had the pleasure of being on the road with. And the same goes for Aaron himself. I don't need to make $1 million. It would be nice, but money doesn't equal happiness. Doing what I love to do does. And that's exactly what I'm getting to do right now. And I think that sets my talk up with Ebo pretty well. We touch on many of these topics and ideas, and as you'll hear, Eric is a seasoned pro touring and studio guitarist who's played with all sorts of artists that you all know. And he also builds incredible handmade guitar amps under the moniker Ebo Customs. He's got a really great story, and ever since I met him over a year ago, I've felt as though we were kindred spirits. I love spending time with him whenever we get to hang, and I think we had a really great chat. So I'm going to get out of the way and let you hear that now. This is me and my friend, Eric Borash.
Yeah, there's tons to talk about.
I mean, I'm out in your driveway talking about my, you know, my fucking waking up with gratitude morning and blah, blah, blah. And
that's good, though, man.
Talk about...
Yeah. You don't have to be right up on it. I set them, you know, like if you want to just get comfy.
Yeah, let me turn my phone up.
Get super comfy. Turn it up, man. Turn the phone up. I like lots of interruptions.
Okay, I'll leave the ringer on. To see who interrupts.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Wow. Oh man. So.
And roll it if you want to, but I really dig what you're doing with this podcast.
Oh, cool.
I really enjoy it.
Oh, awesome, man.
I really do.
That's good. Is that comfortable for you?
I'm just sitting here.
Okay, now take your pants off.
Okay. Well, we are rolling, right?
We are rolling.
We gotta get this.
Yeah, of course. Of course. All of it.
But no, it's cool. I love anything that has to do with music, obviously. Yeah. You know, that's kind of our thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
But listening to artists,
mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, guys that work for a living, you know?
Yeah, right.
Guys that make things.
Yeah, right.
You know, I like that about yours. It's you know, obviously some tremendously creative people, friends.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an insight that you don't get from lot of people.
I try, man. It's tough. It's tough sometimes for me because I feel like I'm still so new at this whole thing. I love talking to people, but just because I love talking to people doesn't mean it's going to translate into a podcast or something.
Doesn't mean anybody wants to hear you talk to people.
Yeah. Fortunately enough for me, I feel like I'm getting better at the conversational side of things. But for example, I interviewed a buddy of mine last night who has been on the show before. Mm-hmm. He's an 11-time Emmy award-winning documentary filmmaker used to be a manager of mine, and he's just one of these guys like hangs out with Richard Branson and and just interviewed Larry King. He's got
he
interviewed Larry King.
Whoa.
For his show, and he's got a so I was exhausted. We went to dinner first last night. And I'll probably post his episode before yours because I did it last night, so this will be good.
People
will have heard that, and maybe you know if they're still listening. I was exhausted. He'd had a long day. He also had two guys with him, two work colleagues that were going to go out for drinks after we talked in his hotel room. So they came and hung out.
Oh, okay.
And so we just sat down for sushi. We waited for an hour and 40 minutes to get the fucking sushi. And then we go to his hotel room and he starts in, and he just did this documentary film called Operation Toussaint, which is on Amazon Prime now. And it's about human sex trafficking. Like he actually in with Navy SEALs and some of these real crazy dudes in Haiti. They went and raided a brothel in Haiti. And he went along with GoPro cameras and his director of photography and all this stuff. And they went in and they put a sting on this sex trafficking operation that was going on there. And so he started the podcast with this real heavy, I mean, fascinating, but also horrifying.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we got through the first 20 minutes or so and I was like, yeah. Where do I go from here?
So how do you like Nashville?
And this is one of my best friends in the world from 20, I've known him for 20 years plus. We've been through so much together. And I was like, then I started to get in my own head about it. Because we not only, there's that, then we've got these two people in the room with us. And I don't like, if I can help it, I like it to be a one-on-one thing.
People have
asked me if I would do Skype interviews or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I have done them.
Yeah, but it's different.
There's something different about sitting across from somebody and looking at somebody in the face and having a conversation.
Totally.
That's not,
in fact, you know what?
Yeah, you want to move that?
I'm going to move this.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say that. I was noticing you were peering around it. Here. This is okay. This is all part of it.
Yeah.
How's that?
That's better. Fantastic.
Now we're going to have erectile dysfunction of the microphone. Okay, cool.
Is that going to work?
Yeah, that's great.
That's fantastic. So I haven't had many difficult interviews, and I realize how lucky I've been to talk to so many people that have been so eloquent and so well spoken and so they just thoughtful, and like a guy like Lee Turner, just great story from
Fred.
I edited 0% of that talk. Zero. You know?
Hi Lee.
Hey Lee.
If this ends up on there. He's what a gem. What a gem of a guy.
No, yeah, totally. And so I take it for granted. So every now and again, I'll get a talk that's a little more difficult.
Yeah, right.
And it freaks me the fuck out. like honest to God, I texted my buddy Nick this morning, the guy that I talked to last night, and I was like, I'm so sorry, man. Like, I hope I was okay last night. My inner guy is a dick. Is a dick. I beat myself up horribly. And I know that, you know, I've talked to our friend Jay Severed about this whole thing. Yeah. I know he is the same exact way.
He's an inner dick, but he's also an outer dick. Like,
do you suffer from any of that at all? Like do you have any of that? Like, does your inner person, does your inner voice like give you shit on things, or are you well adjusted?
Both. Yes, the inner voice is constantly giving me shit.
I think it's an artist thing. I think a lot of people who are in the arts have that thing. And I try to focus on that with the podcast a little bit. Like, I talked to one of my ex-girlfriends is a psychotherapist. He's a brilliant psychotherapist. And I talked to her on one of the recent episodes about depression and about the things that that people in the arts face. And you've seen all the suicides with all these famous people and whatnot. So, anyway, I don't know what I'm getting at.
Not famous.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Right. So do you suffer from any of that at all, or any of the,
I mean,
the artistic mentality, the plague that we
are? Yeah, I mean, I've led a long and colorful life. Well, let's just start from the beginning.
Yeah, why not?
I was born
the son of a poor black sharecropper.
No, I mean, I've run the gamut. I'm probably working backwards. Like I'm probably as well adjusted and content mm-hmm. as I've ever been.
Yeah.
Right now.
Well, you were talking about that when you first got here.
Yeah.
This morning.
A friend of mine was lamenting the aging thing. You know.
Yeah.
Recently, and I was like, dude, Nick. Getting old is kind of fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I mean...
It can be, yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah.
When done properly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're... I think if your body is still, you know, functioning...
Sure.
That part would suck.
Well, there's things that you have to do when you hit your 40s that you didn't have to do when you're...
Well, tell me about it.
Like, just to get...
Tell me about it.
Well, you know, people go like... I just like, oh, man, I hurt my back. What did you do? I rolled out of bed the wrong way.
Shit. No shit.
I moved too quickly, opening the refrigerator.
I know.
Yeah.
The times in my life where I intentionally, deliberately exercised, you know, as a habit, I mean, that didn't start until 40 something,
yeah.
probably.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I get up and I run 5 miles every morning at.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I keep old man hours now. Like I wake up at like okay. 5 a.m. for no reason without an alarm. Just like, time to get up. Rise and shine.
I'm raising my hand right now because I did the same thing this morning. Up at 5:30 and went, what the fuck?
You know? Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Sun's coming up.
Right.
Get out and do something. That's when I listen to podcasts.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay.
That's now. I mean, I've for many years, I've struggled with, you know, booze, drugs, all that stuff.
Sure.
Like I've been sober like 13 years.
Oh,
now.
Have you? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and it wasn't a lifestyle decision.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, you know, you do it long enough and your options limit themselves, and pretty soon it's like, you know, you got door number one, door number two, or door number three, and this one's got mm-hmm. bars on it, and this one's, you know, got a tombstone
yeah.
above
yeah,
it, and
right.
this one, you know, has a little, you know, circle with a triangle in it, so you go there. You know, it wasn't. People say, "Oh man, good for you." It's like, no, it really wasn't a tough decision. It was like, well, door number one, door number two,
yeah,
door number three. So,
yeah.
But no, you know, I'm. I don't know. I don't feel like I've got, you know, struggling with inner demons mm-hmm. or anything. I mean,
yeah.
I guess we all do.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, having... I think they've been in much closer proximity to me through other parts of my life than they are now. Okay.
Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, just, you know, me and the folks, and they still live in the same house I grew up in.
Oh, they're still around? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
They're still
yeah.
here, and, yeah. and got two younger brothers, and none of them, none of them, I was the only, like, I, for whatever reason, I was the music guy.
So they don't do anything musical at all?
No, although they do weird stuff. My, I've got a brother 2 years younger that, like, a couple days out of high school, he just threw his shit in his car and he drove to the mountains. Didn't even know where he was going. He's just, oh, I'm getting out of here. And he landed in West Yellowstone, Montana, and he's been there ever since, and he's got a family and a couple successful businesses, and he's done very well for himself, and he just lives in the mountains and
that sounds amazing.
Kicks ass at stuff and wrestles bears and things. He'll fuck around. He's really something.
That's good.
And then my youngest brother also pursued the weird. He for whatever reason he had a thing for pro wrestling, and so he's done that his whole life. He works for WWE.
Does he really? What does he do?
He writes, produces, does a lot of like the character and talent development.
You're kidding.
And things like
okay.
that. But that's all he's. I mean, that's all he's ever done. He's worked in that industry and he's done really well with it.
Are you into wrestling at all?
No.
No.
I mean, just through him, you know, and I've got a lot of friends in that world. Most, you know, I've met through him and all that. And I dig the, it's not unlike the music business.
It's funny. I have zero, like even as a kid, I had friends who would watch all that stuff and I was only peripherally familiar with like Hulk Hogan and like, you know, all those guys and Lou Albano and all that world. But recently, one of my roommates, this guy Mark that I live with, who's been on the show, he's a big wrestling fan. And so I'll come home some Monday and Tuesday nights and he'll be watching wrestling. And so I'll just kind of hang with him and I've been watching it recently.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating.
It's totally fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't, in fact, even like there have been times where my brother has been, you know, an on-air character, you know, either, you know, commentary or whatever.
Oh, he's done that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But even then, like every now and then I'd tune in and actually watch, and I kind of felt shitty because that's my little brother. I should tune in and watch.
Right.
I guess the part that was always fascinating to me was kind of the, you know, the dressing room, the behind the curtains, the writing, the you know, story development and things like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, were always like, I was more into that. You know, my brother would, you know, he'd send me little, you know, bits, like video clips of some angle they were working on or whatever.
Sure,
he's like, you know, you like this? And I'd be like, that's fucking ridiculous. Or, no, that's awesome. That's really great. So that part, you know.
Right.
And we even like, there have been times, like I've got, you know, a farm out in Wilson County.
Mm-hmm.
Like they'd come out there, you know, I've got this creepy old barn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is pretty funny, actually. I've got, you know, I got an old horse barn out there and everything,
okay.
But like, they at times would come out and shoot bits
out there
out at the farm. Yeah. In fact, the best one, this is okay. Here's name drop number one.
Drop away
for today's podcast.
Drop away.
And this is surreal. Cause I mean, really I'm at the end of a dead end road in, you know, BFE north of Lebanon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, we shot a bunch of stuff out there, some stuff that Billy Corgan was writing.
Oh, cool.
And Billy and I are pretty good pals at this point. We've done a lot of stuff together. And he loves my amps too. He's got a bunch of them.
I can see why, yeah.
But they came out and shot a whole bunch of stuff in the barn over a couple days.
Oh, wow.
And just the whole notion of, you know, a busload of wrestlers, Billy Corgan, you know, sitting in my barn in Lebanon, you know, with
that's bizarre
lights and cameras and all. I mean, hilarious.
I just talked to Katie Cole, who is in the Smashing Pumpkins now.
Her and Howard are both good friends.
Oh, Howard. Okay, that's her producer.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah.
And he's a gem. In fact, Howard is, you know, he's produced a lot of stuff for Billy/Pumpkins, all of that,
yeah.
And And yeah, so he's actually, Howard will, you know, text me a lot and say, yeah, we're, you know, he'll be up at Billy's working on stuff. And
yeah,
he'll say, this bass amp sounds great, or, you know.
Right.
We just blew up the Del Rio, dude. You know.
How did you meet Billy?
I guess initially, I guess I met him through my brother. Initially.
Oh, okay. So that's
the
okay.
wrestling thing. Yeah.
I didn't know Billy was big into wrestling.
Well, that was the whole point of this, is that Billy, he's beyond into wrestling. Like, he owns, he bought the old NWA promotion.
Really?
He owns it. Yeah.
Okay.
And we every time he's in town working, it's hilarious. We'll be at Blackbird for like a couple weeks, you know, and we'll work. You know, he'll have the studio blocked out for a couple weeks, and we'll work till dinner time or something.
Sure.
And then about the time we're going to knock off, wrestlers will start showing up at the studio. And he'll sit in there all night taping, you know, bits for the wrestling show.
That's crazy.
It's hilarious. Yo, he is a total...
I had no idea.
He's a wrestling freak.
Yeah.
Yes, I probably met him initially. I probably met him through my brother.
Okay.
But then we, you know, we kind of ran with it from there because, you know, my brother had the wrestling stuff and all that. But then once we started throwing musical stuff around and guitar-y stuff and ampy stuff and everything,
then it
we really hit it off.
Right.
And he's a sweet, sweet, sweet dude. We have so much fun.
That's what I got a sense of that from Katie when I talked to her.
He's a wonderful guy. Yeah. And it's funny to, like, it could go either way. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll get a text, you know, like, hey man, it's Billy. I'm going to be in town tomorrow, you know, and he could be in town riding. Or, hey, it's Billy. I'm going to be in town tomorrow. You want to come down to the show? And he'll be doing a wrestling card out at the fairgrounds.
Yeah. Right. So you never know if it's going to be music or wrestling. So,
well, it's usually music, but every now and then it's like, hey, come to the wrestling show. Okay.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But he's awesome.
Yeah.
He's awesome. And he's got three of my amps now that he's bought.
Okay.
And they've ended up on all sorts of that stuff that he's been doing the last couple of years.
I should have had this running when we were trying out the amps, but we tried some of your amps and I'm blown away. You know? blown away. In fact, I'll say it on the mic. Fuck it. I probably will be making a purchase very soon. But they're incredible amps for any guitar players listening.
Well, thank you.
And no disrespect to people that I work with.
No, I love them too.
It blows me away. People like you and Chris Nix and Justin Butler, for that matter. You know Justin,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Of course.
How did you get started in doing all that? Because like I've always kind of had a technical mind, and I appreciate the minutia of doing things like to some degree when I'm working in a Pro Tools session with like 40 or 50 different elements.
Yeah,
I'm completely ADD, but that focuses me in a little bit.
Totally.
But I guess I don't understand, or I marvel at guys like you who do that kind of thing. What were the beginnings of that? Like, how did you get started in building amplifiers, or what started you on that path?
For whatever reason, I always had a curiosity about it, and even when I was really little, like, I was always, you know, taking shit apart and blowing shit up and putting it back together.
I used to do the same thing, but I guess I stopped at a certain point and never went past that, you know?
At some point, in high school, and they probably don't do this anymore in high schools, but like in my high school, you know, they had electronics classes.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, you got English and you got algebra, and then you've got, you know, electronics.
Yeah.
And so I had, like, the first couple of years of high school, I know I had taken, you know, they had first year electronics, second year electronics, and so first couple of years I'd blown through all of the electronics courses that the high school offered. And so then And I wasn't ever thinking like, oh, I'm going to pursue a career in electronics. I was just curious and yeah. I loved it. Yeah. And so then I later in high school, I actually started, there was a technical college not far from where I grew up and or where I lived. And I started taking, after high school, I started taking afternoon and night classes. So I had most of an associate's in electronic engineering before I was even out of high school.
So you actually studied how to do it.
But still, it's weird. I look back on it, I'm like, well, I don't know why. Because I was, you know, by that time I was playing in bands and I was like, no, I'm going to go, you know, go play guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but that was just always something that I was interested in. Yeah. I was curious about. There was a book out at the time. It was Electronic Projects for Musicians that Craig Anderton wrote.
Who
used to write for Guitar Player Magazine.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the name, yeah.
And I remember Joe Walsh wrote the foreword to it.
Okay.
And Joe Walsh had an electronic engineering degree from Kent State.
Did he really?
Yeah. And Joe Walsh was always into like tweaking his own stuff, fixing his own stuff, you know, all that. And for some reason, I thought that was pretty cool. Well, Joe Walsh is a badass, but he also like...
Yeah.
And he was also one of the first guys, and this was, you know, this is Stone Age. This is a long time ago because I'm old. You know, he was one of the first guys before things were vintage. You know, he was like... Oh, these old, you know, the old Tweed Fender Bandmasters from the 50s are fucking amazing, you know. And at the time, they were just old amps. I mean, you could probably, you know, $400 or whatever, you could buy one.
Yeah.
But that was also kind of my first exposure to, oh, some of this old stuff was cool, you know.
Yeah.
And this was when I was like 12, you know. I went to college for a couple years to try to finish that out.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, I was in a band that had actually scored a deal and, you know, some stuff. And of course, it all imploded. But I kind of cut my college days short to go do that. And luckily, I had... some professors and people that liked my band, so they were like, independent study.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
So, yeah. So it worked out. I got my thing in the mail, you know. But then I just hit the road. It's just playing guitar.
Did you start playing early on? Like, were you like, as a kid? So,
Yeah, always. I mean, I think I took like some Kumbaya guitar lessons in like fourth grade or something.
We all did, yeah. Right.
But yeah, then just, you know, I just was just like, by high school, I was putting little high school bands together and, you know, I got out of high school and I didn't even think like, oh, you can do this for a living.
Right.
I was just going to go play in bands.
Yeah.
And before I even realized you could do it for a living, I was doing it for a living. So, But yeah, then I kicked around, you know, some regional bands, some road bands, things like that, you know, for a few years. I always remember I had like a little moment of clarity. I was doing a thing on like a Sunday afternoon matinee gig at some shithole in Minot, North Dakota.
Okay.
You ever been to Minot?
I have not been to Minot, no. It sounds like a Star Wars thing.
Yeah, like the Death Star. Sorry, Minot.
That's a, yeah.
But yeah, I remember just, you know, playing to, you know, 30.
Yeah.
It just, in Minot, just fucking cold and shit. And I had like a little moment where I was like, you know, I can always come back to this.
Mm-hmm.
I can always come back and do this. I can do this when I'm 25 years old. Yeah. I can do this when I'm 65 years old.
Sure.
These 30 people in this bar in Minot, they don't give a fuck. You know?
Right, yeah, right.
So I was like, I gotta get out of here. You know?
Yeah.
And so yeah, I I kind of popped around from, you know, I had a little stretch in San Diego, a little stretch in Chicago, was actually going to move to Austin with a buddy of mine, and then he got some gig that he had to take, and so I'm going to Nashville.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
What year was this when you came here?
By the time I actually moved here, it was 97.
97, okay. That seems to be a lot of people I've talked to came here in that window, it seems, like 97, like Lee Turner came here, like 90, 99, I think, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was kind of, there was a boom that had occurred, mm-hmm. you know, then when, you know, kind of not like this one.
Yeah,
but there was a thing where, you know, you had, all of a sudden you had Garth and Travis Tritt and Clint Black, and,
right.
you know, even though he wasn't part of this scene, like Dwight Yoakam, and, mm-hmm. but I moved here, like, it was actually on my radar, the Scorchers, Jason and the Scorchers.
Oh, yeah, I love that band.
I grew up listening to, you know, like, the folks were always into, like, good old, you know, country and Sun stuff, Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis, yeah. and you know, so I always loved that stuff. You know, in my high school parking lot, it was, you know, Zeppelin, Van Halen, yeah, sure, you know, sure, the, sure, that sure, sure. stuff. But also in Minneapolis, you know, there was just the punk scene there was just, when I was, mm-hmm. that was a big deal. Like, you know,
early Replacements are from there.
Replacements, yeah. Husker Du, Soul Asylum, right. The Jayhawks, all of these great fucking bands were in the clubs then.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I mean, I remember when I was in high school, like, Tommy Stinson was, I mean, we were the same age.
Yeah,
you
know? Sure.
We would have been in the same grade if he hadn't dropped out. but I was like, whoa, you know, this is, and those bands were all playing the clubs around town at that time, and
were you going to see these guys? Like,
oh, fuck yeah,
all the time.
Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it was good. You'd go just to see if, you know, Bob Stinson would make it through the night.
Right. Yeah. Know? Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, sometimes it was like the greatest rock and roll show you'd ever seen in your life. And then sometimes it was just drunken chaos.
Right.
Just idiots.
I got a chance to see the Replacements way back. I still love that band. Who was they had another guitar player after Bob Stinson,
Slim,
right?
Slim.
And I remember hearing a story about that saying, well, let's see how this goes tonight, because if he gets just drunk enough, it'll be a great show. But if it's not enough, or if it's more than that, was Bob the same way?
Bob was worse.
What's worse?
It's you know, I think about it a lot, because at the time, you know, you'd go down there just to see the shit show.
Right.
Every now and then the shit show would blow your mind, like, oh my god, like when it worked, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, really, like, okay, you just saw the greatest rock and roll band in the world.
Yeah,
you know. But then more times than not, you know,
it was sad.
The wheels
was
would
it sad or was it...
Well, no, at the time it was hilarious.
Yeah, right.
It was fucking hilarious.
Right.
You know, I mean, Bob would, you know, he'd barely stand up, he'd fall over his abs, he'd piss his pants, he'd, you know, whatever. You know, they'd do an hour of covers that they didn't know, you know, 30 seconds at a time.
Right, yeah.
Just, I mean, beyond ridiculousness, you know?
Yeah.
And it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's sad because, like, you know, like, as everyone probably, you know, like, Bob, he was out of the band, and a few years later he died.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know, yeah. And it's like, well, yeah, we sat there and laughed watching him fucking drink himself to death.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, then you, like, I've talked to Tommy about it a little bit. I don't, you know, I don't, it's, mm-hmm.
it was his fucking brother.
Well, right. Yeah, you know? right.
And
right.
It's like, yeah, ha ha, The Replacements. That's, but it's great. But I'd be lying if I said I don't look back on that now and feel bad, because it's like,
yeah,
you know, Bob's dead, Slim's dead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It
Well, it's anyways. Yeah, right.
Cut.
Hey, let's get sad.
Let's run this fucking podcast sad. Into the let's, ground.
Why not? Why
so, anyways. So, but here, Scorchers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's
right,
the thing.
Right.
So there was, you know, there was the stuff I grew up listening to, and the stuff that we, you know, listened to in the parking lot in high school, and there was the stuff that all of a sudden I was seeing in the clubs.
Right.
Which wasn't necessarily the stuff we were listening to in the parking lot of the high school, you know, and I loved all of this shit. And then I saw the Scorchers, and it's like, okay, everything now makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is a fucking, a punk band, you know, playing country through Marshalls.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that
this
stuff,
all
too.
Makes sense,
you know,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, like, all those that connected all the dots.
Right.
So I think that kind of planted the seed. But then at the time, you know, when I was sitting in Minot going, fuck this, you know, you had, you know, Steve Earle and John Hyatt and Radney Foster and some guys here in town making some incredible music and some great records.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was country, or it was steeped in tradition, but it was certainly not Clint Black. You know, there was something more going on here.
There was a little more like spank on it, kind of.
Yeah,
like a little
but,
more.
But
the
there
rock
was a depth to it too. That
yeah.
that you know. Anyways, that was like when I moved to town. I was like, you know, those are the guys I want to find. You know,
right.
I want to go play with Steve, or I want to go play with John, or I want to go play with Radney, and
right.
I made it around to all of them a little bit.
Did you? Okay.
You know, a couple. Well, I played with Radney for years.
Did you?
That
okay.
was, yeah, okay. that was, seven years. And
okay.
made some really good records with him, too. That was a big one.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of session, like a lot of session stuff.
Yeah,
I know
you played.
I know you played on Bad Things, because that's the thing that. And I don't know. Like, I have to apologize. I don't know much of your playing other than that.
You're not alone.
Well, I'm sure.
I promise.
I'm sure you've played on things that everyone's heard. You know.
I've played on a few things everyone's heard.
What would those things be?
I've played. Probably the one thing that everyone's heard was probably that.
Was Bad Things,
Bad Things, yeah.
And I love that. Like, that's... If I could play any style of music that I don't get to play, it would be that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
right.
And I just love something about the guitar in the stuff Jace does, or in that vein. I don't even know what you'd call that vein.
I don't either.
But it's... just something about it that I gravitate towards when I hear that. I'm like, I want to do that.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I know. We didn't know. I mean, he's one of my dearest friends. Mm-hmm. I love him. Hi, Jace. But I was playing with the Warren brothers, Brad and Brett Warren.
Yeah, very familiar.
I'd been playing with them. I was with them for probably 5 years, and there's a sidetrack, but playing with them, the for one thing, and this was a different time and place, but I guarantee you nobody had more fun. Got away with more shit than
those
we
guys.
Did in that band. That was it's unbelievable. I can't even, you know, your Tales from the Road.
Yeah, right.
You know, I can't tell you any of them.
Oh, God.
But the one thing that playing with those guys, because they wrote prolifically. They were just constantly just spitting out material.
Right.
You know? And for most of the time I was in that band, we'd go in at Sony Tree. That we'd go in like once a week, like every Monday. You know, they'd have like Monday and Tuesday every week blocked out in that studio.
Yeah.
And we'd go in there once a week and cut four or five things, you know, that they had from that week or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we'd cut. we had a thing, Sony After Six. More shit I can't talk about. Anyways, point being, like in that band, like we'd go out on weekends and do, you know, we'd hit the road and do shows. Yeah. But then during the week, we were studio rats. We were always in the studio, and for, you know, every week for a long time. And I know I really got to hone some studio chops with those guys.
Yeah,
you know. But at one point, Jace, I think he had a deal with Epic.
Okay.
I think. And somehow got hooked up with those guys, and they were going to produce this record that never came out. We actually did cut it.
Okay.
But, you know, so they were going to, you know, they were going to use me. And Brad said, I don't really want to play much guitar on this, so you take it. And so we went in to cut this stuff with this Jace guy, and I didn't know him from Adam.
Okay.
You know,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And first morning, I remember, he's cute. he's a dandy.
He's cute.
Who's this fucking guy? It must have been that first day.
Yeah.
I know there was at one point he was singing something. I heard him sing. I was like, okay.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
The guy's got pipes. Mm-hmm. He's a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard something going on, and I remember talking to him about what we wanted to do with this thing we were going to cut. And I made a comment after hearing him singing whatever he was singing, and I'm like, I heard a little bit of Chris Whitley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In there, and I you know, I said, oh, like Chris Whitley? He's like, yes, like fucking Chris Whitley.
Right.
I was like, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
Me and this guy,
we're good. We're good, yeah.
Nobody else in the building knew what we were talking about, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, we both like, oh, yeah. Right. Okay, you get me, I get you, we're good.
Yeah.
And that was set. Then we were off and running, and then that record never came out. He got another deal, I guess, with, was it MCA or something? And by that time, I was doing some live stuff with him, you know, kind of between the Warrens and him.
Right.
And yeah, that Bad Things was just one of many songs we cut for a record back then.
Yeah.
And then a couple years later, he called me and said, oh yeah, just so you know, this is going to be a theme to an HBO series or something. They just picked it up.
Yeah.
I didn't even have HBO. I'm like, oh, you know.
Whatever.
Whatever, yeah. There's a show I'll probably never see. Right. And it turned into a big thing.
Yeah.
But there was a tour I was on a couple years ago, and one of the crew guys from one of the other bands comes up to me, and he's like, hey, dude, somebody told me you're the guy that played on the True Blood song. I'm like, the theme, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. Holy shit, bro, holy shit. And it turns out, like, the entire crew of this
we're all fans
big
of the
band, like, that was what they watched on the bus every night. They'd watch True Blood over and over and over.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, I was like, yeah, in fact, it was that guitar. And I pointed over to the vault, and he's like,
oh, shit,
dude,
yeah.
Can I touch it?
Yeah, right.
I'm like, yeah, go swing it around. I don't care. But the total, we got way off.
No, that's fine.
Topic here, but
it's a podcast. We can do.
Oh yeah. But that was like popular, you know, big world stuff. That was probably a big one.
Yeah, sure.
There were, you know, like I did. I don't know how many records with Radney. Probably four.
Mm-hmm.
Four records with him.
Mm-hmm.
a whole bunch of, I did a whole bunch of the Texas stuff at the time.
Okay.
Like the Randy Rogers band. I played on
okay.
all of their records up until a couple years ago.
Okay.
And some Jack Ingram and Roger Krieger and a whole bunch of the Texas acts, probably the Radney thing, I guess, you know, that kind of got around. So I played on a lot of those. I've played on one, far as I'm concerned, one bona fide classic album.
Okay.
And this will lead us down a whole. Here's another podcast entirely, but Hank Three's "Straight to Hell"
oh,
record,
shit. Okay,
which is that's I think universally like that's his Sergeant Pepper, that's his, okay. you know,
yeah,
and yeah, that was. I listen to that again now and then. I'll throw that on. And it's like, whoa, this is pretty incredible,
right?
Not my stuff, just the record in general. Yeah. But that was a funny period because he was in a lawsuit with Curb at that time.
Okay,
and so he wasn't going to give them another record. You know, they were thrown down pretty hard. Yeah. There was nothing friendly about it. So he was recording that record on the sly in his basement over the course of a couple years, you know?
Yeah.
And he wasn't, you know. Sorry, Shelton, if I'm, you know, getting you in trouble here, but I don't think you give a fuck at this point. I love you for it. You know, so these sessions, call them sessions, they were all going on, you know. He'd show up over there at...
So just right in his basement? You just go down there and work?
Yeah. Yeah, and he had a nice rig built down there.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, and this was pre-sobriety, of course. You know, so you show up over there at 8 or 9 at night, and we'd sit around the bar in the living room, you know, and...
Warm up.
Sometimes the warm up would go on for days, you know. But it's funny because the what came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially if you happen to pass through that little world there,
right.
And it kind of was its own little world. Like there was a gang of and. You know, like that album is really the soundtrack to that couple year period there around his place. It was, there's nothing, it's not a fictional account,
right?
It's very, very real. But the funny part, I met my wife there.
Did you really?
Yeah. It's like 2 a.m. and her and a girlfriend of hers came back with this bass player, a buddy of ours. And yeah, we, you know, we kind of hit it off. More than kind of. We really hit it off.
Well, you're still married, so that's...
We are still married. And
how many years has it been now?
We have been married for 8 years.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and we've been together for, what is it now, 14 ish?
Wow.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were pretty joined at the hip. But, you know, what are the odds? Meet a girl at 2 a.m. at Hank Three's house and
Yeah.
True love.
Yeah.
Can't make that shit up.
That's fantastic.
But I
think all the favorite recording sessions that I've ever done have kind of been like that, where not necessarily going and getting loaded and all that kind of thing, but in a studio that's not necessarily like the nicest, swankiest place in the world,
right.
That's like there's a vibe that gets created, mm-hmm. and you kind of work on that, and you sort of record like, oh, you want to go track this now? Okay, cool, we'll go do that, and it just you can hear that.
Oh, you totally can, dude. Oh, the air in the room,
right?
All of it.
Yeah.
You totally can.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing. It's not necessarily something you can quantify.
Right.
You know, sometimes you only hear it after the fact,
mm-hmm.
Or if you'd have done it somewhere else, you know it wouldn't be the same. Right. You don't know how it wouldn't be the same, but it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, right.
But that's very real, yeah, man.
So here's a question for you. Doing sessions like that, like, you clearly you've done a lot of it. I haven't. I've just done sessions for myself or for people that I've produced and worked with. Was it ever a challenge for you to stay fresh with it, like finding ways into songs, finding interesting things to do? Like, at a certain point, like, I would imagine that the coffer gets full and you kind of go, how am I going to do something that I haven't already done here? Or
I never ran into that.
Really? Okay.
I think I have friends now that run into that daily.
I bet. Well, it just stands to reason that if you do as many sessions as some of these people do, that after a while, I don't mean this to sound disparaging against anybody that's doing it, but at a certain point, you're just going, oh, fuck, I guess I'll just put this kind of thing here because that's what maybe would work here. Rather than, you know, do you think that's taking away from some of the, you know...
I think, in my experience, mm-hmm. I've always been lucky enough to, for the most part, I've played on things for artists that really made it easy.
So it was inspiring you to kind of come up with stuff,
great,
right?
Great songs and a great, artists who knew who they were. You know, all I had to do was play what was in the air. Yeah. And they put stuff in the air for you to grab, It wasn't, it wasn't like, well, here's another,
Yeah.
Here's another song that's just like all the other songs, and let's see if we can do something to make this shit interesting.
And again, not in any disparaging way, because I know there's tons of guys who are super talented that do that stuff every single day. But not every artist is putting shit in the air.
Yeah,
you know.
No, and of course, some days are more inspired than other days. But I don't ever remember running into a thing where, like, I felt like I was out of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was out of ideas that the artist liked.
Yeah,
that happened. I if anything, I had the opposite problem. Like, much as I love touring, also, mm-hmm. Especially the last, like, after a while, playing the exact same show all the time, mm-hmm. like, I would find ways to make it challenging.
Right.
But, that would wear me out quicker than the studio. The studio, and sometimes, too, like, I was notorious, even for, a low-budget session or whatever, I'd still have a truckload of stuff, I'd have five or six great old amps in the booth and a rack of guitar, all this stuff, and a lot of times, just grabbing this particular guitar and this particular amp or whatever, stuff would come out of those things, they would inspire.
Well, great gear will do that. Like those, there's those classic combinations of like this guitar through this amp is always going to be that magic thing, or whatever. Yeah.
Or this guitar through this amp. Well, nobody's ever fucking done this. Yes,
this probably wouldn't work, and because it wouldn't,
who
it
in
probably
their right
wouldn't,
mind
it does,
would
yeah.
do this,
right? Yeah.
Besides Jay Joyce.
Yeah.
Jay Joyce would do that.
Yeah.
That man has no fear. I love him. But no, I never felt like I ran out of stuff. I always loved, I loved working mm-hmm. that way. Yeah. I still dabble. Mm-hmm. The world has changed. This was.
Yeah.
There was a time where a guy could stay pretty busy doing, You could do three or four sessions a week, and I was like a D-list session dude, but I didn't play on a lot of the right up the middle stuff,
mm-hmm.
But I played on lots of cool stuff and lots of fingers in the air, critically acclaimed.
Oh, okay, cool.
You know, yeah, yeah. Critically acclaimed, sure. Which means, yes, great records that 10 people bought, you know, but all 10 of those people, you know, some great stuff.
Yeah.
Really great stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff that still holds up. I can listen to a lot of that stuff now. It's like, yeah, that was fucking really good.
Right.
But I played, like I played on a lot of stuff with, like, I played on Eric Church's stuff, you know, before that blew up. Casey Musgraves, you know, mm-hmm. Casey, she was out. I had her out singing. She was singing background vocals with Radney in the road band.
Oh, really?
For a year or so.
She's great, man.
Yeah, I love her stuff. She's fantastic. She actually, that was while I was working with him. She had, we had done a show in Texas somewhere, and if I recall, she just came to the bus and knocked on the door. And, yeah. You know, like, is Radney here? You know? Well, here, I write songs, and, you know,
yeah,
here's a CD, and
I'm going to be famous someday.
I'm pretty sure that's where it all started.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I feel really good about, you know, I don't think I've played on many things at all that I wouldn't be proud to play you right now.
Sure.
You know, I don't have...
That's great, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it all still holds up. And like I say, I still dabble. I'll go do, you know, I've got a few friends, so I'll go do a record here and there.
Yeah.
You know,
but have you just been concentrating more on the amps lately than anything else? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to that. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I spent about 7 years like full time on the road here
mm-hmm.
over more recent history.
Right.
Because the hustle of you know, studio work, it's like it got tougher to really, you could make a living, but you're not going to do much better than that.
Yeah.
And that got harder, and the road money was getting a little better, and so I kind of, it was probably 7 years here recently where I was pretty much on the road all the time.
Yeah. Who all were you out with?
Let's see, as far as like the 200 days a year or whatever stuff, like I did a couple or maybe 2.5 or 3 years with Sunny Sweeney
when she
had her deal, and that was a lot of fun. And that was like, I actually Sunny is fucking, she's awesome. She had actually I had met her in Austin. I was there doing a record with somebody else, and I had gone to Continental after mm-hmm. we were done working.
Yeah.
And we're out on the sidewalk out front, and a friend says, "Oh, Ebo, this is my friend Sonny. You know, you got to meet my friend Sonny." And she may have had a few beers, and she's got one in her hand, and she comes up, and she's sticking this long neck in my nose. She's like, "I fucking know who you are." She's like, "You're that, you play with Radney with that Les Paul down here." And she starts doing this impersonation of me on the sidewalk.
That's great.
And she's like, again, poking me in the nose with a long neck. She's like, "Whenever I got the budget, you're playing in my fucking band, motherfucker."
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
So actually, yeah, it worked out, and it was so much fun. Because this was part of the reason I was really keen on doing it, is mm-hmm. that it was a country band, like legit,
straight up,
pedal steel fiddle.
Right.
I was on a Telecaster
the
whole time, doing legit country music, which you don't get the chance to do much anymore.
Right. No,
really.
I mean, it's all rock bands now, essentially. Yeah. Yeah, right.
But you know, she's a great writer, and some really great songs, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And also, that was a vocal. I really had to up my vocal game on that mm-hmm. one too, because she had Joanna Janae out singing BGVs,
oh, wow.
and playing
okay.
acoustic, and she is She is the top shelf. She is she is the best. And
I don't know her, so
she's awesome. Hi, Joe.
This is assuming these people are going to listen to this.
Everybody's going to hear this.
I hope so. That'd be cool.
But no, she tremendous singer. And so the stuff on the records was it was pretty dialed in, and mm-hmm. so we were the three of us singing constantly, and I was like the guitar player in the band, so it wasn't, kind of had to cover all this stuff, but also was singing a lot. And so really had to up my vocal chops on that one, which was great, because then I went from that one to Thomas Rhett.
Oh, Thomas Rhett, yeah, okay, right.
And that was from his first formal, like his first single was out.
Okay,
they wanted to put a proper band together for him, and so we went out, we hit the road with, what was it, Toby Keith, I think, was the first tour.
Okay.
In fact, the first show was at the Shed in Salt Lake, and he'd never done a gig that big before, you know? And I remember we're like walking around the deck before sound check, and he's like, holy shit.
Freaking out, shit. Yeah.
I'm like, no, man, it's good. We got this. You're good. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. yeah, it's all going to be fine.
It all worked out.
Yeah, yeah.
He really took to it.
He's doing okay.
He's doing great.
He's doing all right. Yeah, I'm of all people I'm not worried about, it's Thomas Rhett.
I'm not worried about him. He's doing good. But yeah, and that was a lot of fun too, because initially that band was guitar, bass, and drums,
mm-hmm.
It's pretty much a rock band, at the time, was not track heavy or anything like that. We were just going out and just throwing down,
rocking.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did that. What was it? Was it 3 or 4 years? 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Up until I guess year before last.
Okay.
It was a lot of fun, and he's a sweet dude.
Yeah,
we're still friends. I think by the end of that one though, like it had evolved to the point where like, I'm not the guy that.
Yeah.
I think initially, like, you needed a guy with a Les Paul at his knees and a giant pair to swing around, and that was what the gig needed. And
okay,
yeah. I think by the end, as it moved into more of a pop thing or whatever, it's like, I'm probably not the guy that they need for this anymore. And
so you kind of got more, focused on the amp stuff in the last little bit here. To kind
before, of... actually, I think it was probably the last year I was out with TR. I had already kind of started, rather than like dabbling in, that stuff, I'd kind of started to like put some pieces in place. I'd got some copywritten the name and the logo and done some stuff.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to take some photos of this stuff too. And I'll post the amps on the show notes and whatnot. And I will tell you, if you're a guitar player out there, two words, three words, holy fucking shit. I played through two amps here that are again, I work with Valve Train amps. They make some incredible things as well. Rick Gessner's a great guy and
Hi,
a
Rick.
Good friend.
I'm a fan as well.
Eric's got some incredible amps. I will say that. I've played through a couple things here that are amazing. And so, and you've been, I mean, you've gotten all kinds of people are playing these things now. Like, it's a who's who kind of.
Well, like the high school parking lot Ebo that we were discussing earlier would shit all
he
over
is, He is shitting. On a different string.
Cut, yeah.
Cut. String as in like, what I'm talking about. In the quantum mechanics.
Yeah, but most of the dudes in my record collection back then were...
So you got Billy Gibbons.
Yeah, and... Billy, Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick. In fact, most of... No, I'm not going to say most of. I'm going to say 95% of the stuff on... the recent Cheap Trick record was my amps.
What's he using?
He's got a Del Rio that we've used on almost everything. But Tom used my Fat Bastard. I do a bass rig.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That's just a
a great name for a bass amp.
Fat Bastard. Fat Bastard. Two S's.
I love it. That's great. That's fucking great, man.
But Tom cut some stuff through that for the record. So almost everything on the record was those. Wow. And then they actually used a rock show head on a lot of the leads too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, tons of that stuff. Brad Whitford from Aerosmith. In fact, I got an email recently from Greg Howard, who is Brad's tech, but they're also partners in Three Monkeys amps, which are also awesome.
Yeah.
But he sent me an email, and Brad was using a Del Rio head for the Vegas residency.
Okay.
Which was pretty sweet when you know, two guys that own their own amp company
are using your stuff.
You know, are emailing you and saying, "Hey, love your stuff, man." But yeah, so those guys, Vince Gill has been an avid proponent. God bless him. I know that he's got a Barfly and a Del Rio combo.
Okay.
And those have been, he's used those are his Time Jumpers amps. He's used them a lot on the Time Jumpers gigs. Which says something too, because I wasn't thinking like Western Swing when I designed these. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They nail it.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
But yeah, like I say, Billy Corgan has been a great supporter as well. Mm-hmm. Tom Bukovac.
Sure.
He's had one of everything at one point. He's been leaning real hard on the rock show heads lately.
Yeah.
They've been on.
Yeah. I'm bummed we can't try that one here.
Yeah, we gotta do that.
We should bring it over Nix's place after this.
It's a good idea.
Is he
home?
Yeah, I was planning on swinging over there after this.
Okay.
We'll go by.
Okay. Cut. Okay, 3, 2, 1.
And we're back.
But yeah, it's a long list, dude. It's a long list. Rob McNally, a lot of cats in town. I know I'm forgetting some big ones, which
yeah,
is...
Yeah, yeah.
I could go by like... I'd done a version of the Del Rio that has the baffle... cut on it is actually the silhouette of Texas, state of Texas.
Oh, okay.
And I built one of those for Radney years ago. And he had taken it around, and then somebody saw one and they took it around. And Jeff Hill from the Randy Rogers Band had one. And he had used it at one point on, you know, like Leno and Letterman and stuff like that. Yeah. Apparently, Willie Nelson was watching on the bus and saw that amp and called Randy and said, "Hey, I got to get one of those amps." And then Randy put us in touch. So
you did one of those Nelson.
For Willie.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. That's amazing.
Yeah, and he pulls it out from time to time for Farm Aid or stuff like that. That's pretty cool.
It's amazing.
There are many I'm forgetting, but I've been very, very blessed that way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy to have guys that I've thought that much of my whole life.
Totally understandable. I mean, they're
customers.
They sound amazing.
And so, I don't give any away. I've never given an amp away. I don't even do,
nor should you. I mean, you know.
Well, for one thing, I can't. They cost me too friggin' much to build.
Yeah.
But also, it's, you know, I've never played free gear. You know, like I, if there's something that does what I want, I go buy it.
But
I don't. I mean, nowadays, you know, I'm not gonna drop five figures on a whatever. I got a family.
I got a wife and a kid at home.
That's right. But you know, I have never shied away You come out to the place sometime. And
I would love to. Like, yeah, I'd love to.
I've never shied away from, like, if this is what I need, if this is the best thing I can get to do this, I gotta get it.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
And there have been times where I've, even if it's a fairly specialized piece, it's like, you know, in session world, it's like, well, even if this is a once or twice a year thing, if this does this better than anything else, I gotta have one of these.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so as a result, I mean, I got a lot of amps, dude.
That's fantastic.
I got a lot of amps, but yeah, I guess when I knew that, you know, I wasn't going to want to stay on a bus forever, you know, and I really did, especially that last year out with TR, I was kind of like, well, what am I going to do, really? What am I going to do with the next 20 years of my life?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Even if I wanted to keep doing this, I'm not going to, I mean, you know, at some point, especially in the present climate and all that stuff, like, you know, at some point, you know, you just, they're just not lining up to find 60-year-old guitar players, you know, to play in a 22-year-old's road band.
Well, that's it. And I think it's, I mean, I'm not quite as old as you, but not far behind you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, for me too, I'm sort of looking at a couple years down the line and going, okay, what, because this is all I know. Like, this is all I know how to do. So what the fuck am I going to do when I'm, you know, when I don't look like I look now?
Yeah, and that's, and it's not, you know, I don't want to sound like old farty or morbid or anything like that, but, you know, most of my life, I didn't really think about that too much. I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't just going and doing whatever for free and not watching the money or whatever. I had to make a living, but, you know, I was just always like, well, something will lead to something, will lead to something, and, you know, it'll work out.
Yeah.
But I guess it wasn't until, you know, later years where I started to look at it, and it's like, you know, there's no such thing as a retired sideman.
That's true.
There is no such thing.
No, right, yeah.
No,
yeah.
There are like dead sidemen, or there are broke former sidemen, or there are sidemen that could no longer work as sidemen that had to find something else to do.
Right.
You know, and it's not a... I don't want to sound cynical or anything like that.
You don't at all. It's not that. No, you don't at all.
But just, you know, there are exceptions here and there, but for the most part, you know, we all have there's a lifespan in this business, in this world, and you know, if you're able to make hay when the sun's shining, and you make enough hay to, you know, set yourself up or whatever, that's great. Most of us don't.
Right.
Even those of us that have done okay, you know, we're not like set for life.
Right.
By any stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's, I think that's a, how do I put it? The idea that you'd be set for life and that everything's okay and it's whatever.
That's bullshit, actually.
Yeah. You know, you were saying earlier, or was it you? That even if you had $1 million, like, you'd find other ways. There'd be other places in your life where things would not work out. You know, you could have all the money in the world, but no, this is my friend Nick that was saying this last night. I'm confusing the two because I've been having chats. You know, I've had a lot of coffee today.
Sweet.
But my friend Nick was saying this last night that he, you know, he knows Richard Branson.
Yeah.
Richard Branson has problems. That guy's a billionaire.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
I think it's all about being happy. It's all about trying to find whatever happiness is for you, which is a different thing for everybody. But whatever it is, you find a way to be happy, and then the rest works itself out. Money's not real. You know what I mean? Money is...
No, and, well, I don't know what you mean.
Okay. Well,
it's not.
It's just one of those things that, you know what I mean. I mean, it's not a real thing. We make it into way more than it fucking should be.
Yeah,
you know?
No, that's true. That's a fact. Yeah. You know, it's not money. Yeah, it doesn't. Happiness is ultimately what you need to have. Yeah.
And you were saying that, to bring it back around, you know, as you were getting here today, you were kind of saying as you got out of your truck in the driveway as we were unloading your amps, you were being grateful. And I was kind of like, oh, this is cool. I get like you're grateful for the I shouldn't be here.
That was just the thought I woke up with this morning. I don't know why. Although it's a good thought to have. I should wake up with it every morning.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did wake up with the thought, like, you know, just a quick little, you know, life flashing before your eyes moment, and think, wow, you know, I all the times where, you know, I could have gone left or right, and I went left.
Yeah.
And had I gone right,
yeah,
curtains, you know,
right.
Whether it's, you know, by occupational hazards, yeah, or, you know, just the leading a adventurous life,
yeah,
or just lots of things, whatever, you know. I could get hit by a car, right, whatever.
I heard something great on this same note. I think it might have been Joe Walsh. I don't want to misquote it, but I'll attribute this to Joe Walsh right now. And if I'm wrong, somebody can email in, or I can look it up. But life, as you're living it, appears to be a series of random events that have no rhyme or reason. But when you take a bird's eye view of it, it is the most well-written, well-formed,
I don't know if that was Joe or not, but that's a fact.
It's brilliant, isn't it? That's great. And I like to think of things that way, like, even because we all have moments where you're like, oh fuck, this happened, and oh my god, what am I going to do?
Yeah,
you know, life is a series of highs and lows. Without the lows, the highs wouldn't be highs.
Yeah,
you know. So I like to think of that every now and again when I'm going through something where it's, you know, and I've had shit happen. But you just go, okay, I will be okay, you know, or yeah, I'll be dead and I won't know any better.
Yeah. there's always that option.
There's always that option. Well, you know, we hope that comes later than sooner, but.
No, but even that's a fact.
See, there you go.
That took a long time.
It did take a long time. That's the
I was
first...
going to shut my rigger off before
Shit,
we started
man, that's
this.
That's an hour, like, and 15 minutes
no,
in.
No, leave it on. Leave it on. We'll see what happens.
Eric Boresh is the least popular man in Nashville.
Fact. It's my old buddy, Charlie Richards from Austin. Charlie, yes. The answer is yes. That is me on that record.
As he's listening to this weeks later.
Yeah, I won't text him back. I'll just
tell him, listen to this podcast.
That's amazing.
For the answer. You'll get your answer in 2 weeks. That's awesome.
But, you know, that, if it was Joe,
mm-hmm,
or whoever said that,
mm-hmm,
that's the funny part. You couldn't make up a story like this,
right?
You yeah know, and I think about the horrible decisions I've made at times.
Well,
you know,
we've all been there.
And like, but yet they ended up being the best decisions.
Yeah,
horrible, horrible decisions that that. Like, wow, yeah, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And whether you believe in, you know, I mean, I'm a higher power guy personally,
yep,
you know, but whatever, you know, it does kind of make you think, well, you know, maybe it's not divine intervention or the hand of God or whatever, but, you know, I find faith in that.
Mm-hmm.
I find faith in, like, you know, okay, I'm better at making decisions now.
Right.
And even when I was horrible at making decisions, I still
you
came
still
out
made okay,
okay.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
So how bad could it be?
Right.
You know?
Another friend of mine used to tell me too, and it was because I always used to stress out about forks in the road, about decisions, yeah, about big decisions that I would make. And he would always say to me, and this is my one of my good friends, Paul Akers, who's hi Paul, he's probably not listening, but it's a lot of shout outs to people who are not fucking listening.
The long list of credits at the end of this. Special thanks to the 20 people we said
right
hi to.
But Paul used to say, just make a decision and it'll be the right one because you made it.
Yeah.
And that has always held true for me. You
yeah
know, even the wrong decisions have led to things that have shaped you know, life as it is. So
it's who we are. We're still gonna sit there and go, oh, what the hell should I do?
What should I do?
Right. But I used to just angst over it. Mm-hmm. You know? Like I always felt like, you know, the wrong decision here is the end. Like,
yeah,
this will be the end of my fucking career, or the end of my relationship, or the end of my, you know, whatever. Like, this is all the marbles. Right. If I fuck this up, I'm totally screwed. Yeah.
Guilty, dude. I'm totally guilty of the same thing.
And that is utter bullshit that I made up in my head because here we are.
Right.
You know, bad decisions, good decisions.
So you are afflicted with some of that artist mentality. See, this is the first question I asked you.
Wow.
See? Well, see how we brought it around? It
took a while to get there.
To get there. That's good.
But no, it's, you know, the worst things that have happened to me in life have been the best things to happen to me and all of that shit. And yes, to put a bow on it, you know, in hindsight, you look at it and it's like, well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what. I never, if you'd asked me years ago, you know, hey, well, you're not going to be a rock star, but, you know, all these dudes that you love so much, you know, they're the ones calling you to, you know,
that's pretty cool,
build me something, or, you know, work on something or whatever. Like it's there's so many things that would have never happened.
Right.
You know, honestly, I much as I loved touring, the second I got off a bus and was actually home on some kind of permanent basis, I was amazed at how much of the world was happening. Like I did, I feel like there were 6 or 7 years out of my life that were awesome, but you know, there was a whole world happening outside of that bubble that I was just absent for, and you know. I remember having even a couple months after I'd gotten off a bus and was just home, and all of these things started happening. That like, you know, I'm driving around Nashville, you know, with Billy Gibbons in the truck, and we're like, you know, going to find a place to have a good steak or whatever, and we're talking about Little Richard, and we're, you know, all this. And it's like, this just happened because I was here,
right?
And I was here, and this guy was here, and all of a sudden we did this, and all of a sudden me and Billy, you know, are running off to do this, and just little stuff like that, and that stuff started happening every week. There'd be these little things that would happen. It's like, God, I'm glad I didn't miss this.
Right.
I'm glad I didn't miss this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love touring, and there's so much that happened out there that I would beautiful things that I'll cherish forever. High adventure,
right?
High adventure.
Yeah.
But you know, I didn't imagine I'd be kind of taking this sharp left and experiencing some of the stuff I've gotten to experience, and it's really great.
Well, it looks like you're doing okay.
It's really great. I'm very grateful and very happy, and by God, I love building amps.
That's awesome. I like playing through them. So hopefully I'll get to do that more someday soon. Eric, thank you so much for taking time out to come and talk to me, man. It's awesome. It's great. I knew this would be good. I knew it was going to be good because right away when we met, I was like, I like this guy.
Well, we'll do a part two next year.
Yes.
We'll check back.
Dude, anytime you want to come back.
Okay.
Anytime at all.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll talk gear.
I'd love to do that. Let's do that. Let's
do that. We scratched the surface.
I know. That's the best thing. That part two is coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.
Yeah,
we're gonna answer the questions that you have 2 years from now. So get ready for that.
Yeah. And Nick's. We're coming over.
We're coming for you. Thanks, man. Thanks, dude. Okay, I hope you enjoyed my talk with Ebo, Eric Borash.
I love that guy. Always a pleasure. If you're a guitar player and you want to take a look at Eric's amazing hand-built guitar amps, you can find them at ebocustoms.com. That is ebocustoms.com. I'm going to go ahead and post a link under the show notes for today's episode at tiopod.com, so please go check that out. I'm also going to remind you once again about our Patreon page, because it's very, very important. It's patreon.com/turniton. That is patreon.com/turniton. Please consider becoming a patron of the show to help us keep the lights on over here and the shows coming your way regularly and for free. It would mean the world for me. We need to get some people signing up on this thing. Do me a favor also and give me a follow on the socials. I'm at Michael J Music on Facebook and Twitter, and also at Michael J Official on Instagram. We also have a brand new Instagram account for the show at Turn It On Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, I also encourage you to go back and check out any one of the previous 57 episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast fix. This summer may get just a bit dicey as far as the timeline goes with getting new shows up, because I'm going to be doing a whole lot of touring with Aaron Goodvin and the guys, but rest assured the shows are going to keep coming even if they're not on a weekly basis. I will try the best that I can. Please keep coming back. I'm not going anywhere. Thanks again so much for listening, everyone. It really means a lot to me that you like the show as much as you seem to, and I will catch you all again here very soon on Turn It On.